ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர்க், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் அஹிம்சா ஸ்பீச், டான்ஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் லைஃப், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Mentioned a few weeks ago, we're working on 12 talks for Rishis, one for each month for the coming year. For two purposes. One is their first Sunday of the month Homa at the spiritual park, where they're getting 300 to 400 people are attending now. Every month, so it's a pretty good group, and part of the main focus, of course, is on Homa, and burning prayers, and lots of beautiful chanting, and singing, bhajan singing. But also, Manohar Marimuthu gives a talk in Creole, so we thought it'd be nice to create 12 subjects that would work well in talks there, very practical subjects, something you can go away with and have something to do. There's a strong message, okay, I'm going to go home, I'm going to do this. That's the idea. It gets down to that level. It just doesn't change your thinking, it changes your actions. So, also we have an opportunity from Dr. Pillai, who publishes a Hindu newspaper, monthly newspaper called Banakam. He said he'd give us a full page every month. So that's a pretty generous offer. So I thought we could have this same talk, probably in English, as part of that page. So here goes. Here's kindly speech, Mauritius version. One of Gurudeva's key teachings is that we are a soul, a divine being. However, Gurudeva also stresses that we are a soul that is living in a physical body, an embodied soul. Therefore, in addition to the soul, we also have an instinctive and an intellectual nature. Gurudeva describes this as the three phases of the mind: superconscious, or spiritual, or the soul, intellectual, or mental, and instinctive, or physical, emotional. It is the instinctive nature, the animal-like nature, which contains the tendencies to become angry and harm others. Therefore, part of making progress on the spiritual path is learning to control the instinctive mind. This is where the yamas, the 10 ethical restraints, come into play. The yamas give us a list of tendencies we need to restrain. The classical depiction in Hinduism of restraint is the charioteer pulling back on the reins of a team of 3, 4, or 5 horses to keep them under control. One of the uses of the yamas is as a convenient reference list to see how well the instinctive mind is being controlled. Adults can use this for self-examination, as well as a guide for thinking about their children's behavior and refining it. The first yama, of course, is non-injury, ahimsa, not harming others by thought, word, or deed. Ahimsa, non-violence, as we all know, is a central principle of Hinduism. Of course, most of us do not indulge in physical violence, therefore we may conclude that ahimsa presents no challenge to us. However, let's look more closely at the definition of ahimsa, which is not harming others by thought, word, or deed. This points out that we need to practice ahimsa in our speech and even our thoughts. An important attitude to have to make progress on this spiritual path is that we need to focus on our weak points and strive to improve them. Furthermore, we need to hold the attitude that no matter how well we are doing in a particular practice, such as ahimsa, we can still do better. We can always find a way to further refine our behavior. Thus, in this talk, we are focusing on speech, specifically looking at words that hurt, and looking for ways we can further improve our speech so that it is less hurtful. The common forms of hurting others with our speech are joking, teasing, gossiping, and backbiting. Four ways. Let's look at some examples illustrating joking and teasing. First example. Someone has a special privilege or position that we don't. So we say, he got to skip the work today that we did. He has really got it easy. Second example. Someone speaks English with a foreign accent. You repeat back his mispronunciation and laugh. Third example. Someone has difficulties, such as in multiplication. When she is having trouble making a calculation, you make fun of her. The rationale for this behavior is, I'm just joking, trying to be humorous, creating some laughter. However, in truth, your words are ahimsa. You are harming another through your speech and justifying it by saying, you were just joking. Gurudeva has given us a very useful guideline for seeing if our speech is appropriate. It provides us a fourfold test. Speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary. I know of some of Gurudeva's devotees who initially took this guideline a bit too literally and decided most speech was unnecessary. And almost stopped speaking altogether. However, that was a misinterpretation. In terms of joking and teasing, the first two ways of hurting through words, the first test to apply is the test of helpfulness. In other words, everything I say to others should be designed to help them do better in some way. Let's look at our three examples again and see if any of them pass the test of being helpful. First example, someone has a special privilege or position that we don't, so we say, he got to skip the work today that we did. He has really got it easy. Second example, speaking English with a foreign accent and you repeat back his mispronunciation and laugh. Third example, woman has difficulty in multiplication and she's having difficulty making the calculation, you make fun of her. Certainly none of these three pass the test of being helpful. Let's take another example, this time of someone who is overweight, who is a friend or family member. We are genuinely concerned that it is best for his health to lose some weight. Therefore, our words pass the test of being helpful because we have the person's well-being at heart here. But to simply tell him straight out, you are fat, fails the test of being kind. We need to express our concern, our desire to be helpful, more gently, such as, it might be good for your health if you lost a little weight. So that's combining kindliness and helpfulness. We're saying that we need to make sure in being helpful, we're also being kindly. Next is gossip. Gossip is talking about the details of others' personal lives when they are not present for the delight of it. Gossip is like creating and watching our own television soap opera. It clearly fails the test of being helpful as it is designed to entertain the participants at the expense of the individual being gossiped about. There is no desire to help that individual. Some wives regularly indulge in the practice of gossiping about their husbands. While their husbands are at work, they spend a great deal of time on the phone or on the internet with other wives, sharing at length the details of their husband's life. Gossip about one's husband, of course, fails three tests: kind, helpful, and necessary. Husbands don't usually gossip, but they do tease their wives. And that too fails the three tests of being kind, helpful, and necessary. Husbands need the support of their wives to be successful. Wives need the support of their husbands to be secure and happy. This can be achieved through controlling our speech and making sure it passed all four of the tests. Last but not least of the four ways of hurting others through words is backbiting. Finding faults in another and sharing this finding with others is a hobby many enjoy. It is so much easier to look for faults in others and complain about them than to see the same faults in us and change them. The Tirukkural devotes an entire chapter to avoidance of backbiting, which shows men's nature hasn't changed much over 2,000 years. Two verses. If men perceived their own faults as they do the faults of others, could misfortune ever come to them? Just one verse. Of course, this fails our speech tests of kind, helpful, and necessary. The truth is that unless we are responsible for someone else's upbringing or training, such as parents to their children or supervisors to their staff, then it is best to ignore the faults of others and indeed focus on finding and improving our own faults. In conclusion, remember, we always have a choice. We can choose to hurt others by joking, teasing, gossiping, or backbiting. Or we can choose to talk about others in ways that are respectful, kind, and constructive. And above all, remember Gurudeva's key: speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary. Om Namah Shivaya.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our guest. We're working on a series of 12 talks to be used in Mauritius. We have a once a month ceremony there, Homa, with the public invited, and they have around 300 or 400 people coming every event, so it's a nice group, plus we have an opportunity to have a page in a local publication called Vanakam, which is a Hindu religious monthly newspaper. The editor, Dr. Pillai, has offered us one page a month, so it's a wonderful opportunity to reach out. He distributes 5,000 copies, so nice opportunity there to reach out. So we're developing these talks so they can be used both at the Homa and in the publication Vanakam. So each talk has a practical aspect, as we mentioned previously, something you can take home and do. Very important part of Gurudeva's teachings is to bring it down to the level of improving our behavior, eliminating things we really shouldn't be doing and doing more of the things we should, improving our behavior. So this is a topic you've heard before. It's based on the talk on dance and the spiritual path. My guru, Savaya Subramanya Swami, had the gift of bringing down to earth in a very practical way the guidelines for becoming a more spiritual person. It is easy to talk high philosophy in Hinduism. Man is God, we are divine, and so forth. It is easy to say profound things such as you are a being that has unlimited power within you. But to bring spiritual teachings down to the level where we really are a more spiritual person this year than we were a year ago, that is the challenge and what we will explore in this talk. The ability to do exactly that is part of Gurudeva's genius. He gives us these very pragmatic guidelines along with a high philosophy, and in the process keeps us feeling good about ourselves. We don't take the approach that we have all these weaknesses and therefore man is weak and sinful. That is not the point. Man is a divine being, meaning man is the soul or spiritual being. But we also have these other qualities that come along with being a person. We have instincts. We have an intellect. We have an ego, and we need to get them all under control so that our soul, our spiritual nature, dominates over all. As Gurudeva says, peace is control, and control is freedom. This talk on dance and the spiritual path is based on a talk given in California at a dance performance, or Arangetram, first public dance performance, given in August 2003. And it gives five ways the attitudes involved in studying dance and the attitudes involved in striving to make progress on the Hindu spiritual path are indeed the same. It takes a very practical approach to the subject. Some of you, listening of course, not present, some of you may not know that Gurudeva himself was an accomplished dancer. On special occasions, he would dance in the Indian classical Manipuri style. When he spoke about dancing, he would regularly make the comment that in learning dance, you are expecting the dance guru to point out your weakest areas, not simply to compliment you on what you are already doing well. In fact, he would say, you pay the teacher to criticize you, to point out your weakest areas. And that is Sadhguru. He was doing the same in our spiritual life. Gurudeva's comment leads nicely into our first comparison of the spiritual path to the study of dance, which is the attitude toward strengths and weaknesses. Does a young woman become a better dancer by focusing on the movements she does well? Of course, she does not. She has to focus on the movements that she does not do well and strive to improve them. Said another way, she becomes a better dancer not by focusing on her strengths, but rather by focusing on her weaknesses. Looking at the spiritual path, let's take the example of someone who is happy to help coordinate activities at a nearby Hindu center. However, when she attends puja, she doesn't really feel much devotion for the deity. Her strength is service, and her weakness is devotion. Therefore, to further advance, she needs to focus less on service and more on activities that will help her deepen devotion, such as learning and singing bhajans, growing flowers in the home garden for the temple, and sewing clothes for the deity. A second comparison between dance and the spiritual path is the attitude toward improvement. A good dancer has the attitude that she can always perform a dance better than she has ever done it before. She feels there is always room for improvement, and that her movements can always be even further refined. Looking at the spiritual path, let's take as our example the principle of ahimsa, nonviolence in thought, word, and deed. It is indeed a central principle of Hinduism. Of course, most of us do not indulge in physical violence. Therefore, we may conclude that ahimsa presents no challenge to us. However, looking more closely at the definition of ahimsa, we see that it is not harming others by thought, word, or deed. This points out that even though we are not harming others with our actions, we can take the attitude of striving to improve our behavior even more by carefully watching our speech and avoiding harming others through our words. The common forms of verbal violence are joking, teasing, gossiping, and backbiting, and every reduction we make in lessening others, and every reduction we make in harming others less through our words produces spiritual progress. A third comparison of the spiritual path to the study of dance is our attitude toward mistakes. Many dancers, when they first start, are very self-conscious about their mistakes. They make a mistake and get flustered and can't really concentrate on the rest of the dance class. A good teacher will encourage them and point out that mistakes are natural. All dance students make them. Because of the teacher's encouragement, we soon overcome being self-conscious of our mistakes and take on a more positive attitude, which is, if we make a mistake in a dance, next time we will try our best to do the movement better. For all of mankind, no matter where one is on the path, spiritual advancement comes from learning from one's mistakes in life. Unfortunately, this process is often inhibited by the idea that somehow we are not supposed to make mistakes. A common first reaction to making a mistake is to become upset that we made the mistake, get emotional about it, or if it is a serious mistake, to become quite burdened and even depressed. We need, however, to be like the dancer and simply resolve to do better next time. Thus a good second reaction to a mistake is to think clearly about what happened, why the mistake occurred, and find a way not to repeat the mistake in the future. Perhaps we were not being careful enough, and resolving to be more careful next time will prevent the problem from occurring. Perhaps we did not know something, and now we have that knowledge and can simply resolve to use that knowledge next time and thus avoid making the same mistake again. A fourth comparison is that dance, like spiritual practice, involves a disciplined control of willpower, awareness, and life forces. In dance, willpower is used to move the body through the challenging positions in time with the music and gracefully. Our awareness needs to constantly focus on the meaning of the song and how that meaning is being expressed in our facial hand and body gestures. Life force must constantly move through the body in a controlled manner. In fact, Gurudeva, in teaching basic Manipuri dance movements, would stress that first you move the life force, the prana, and only then do you move the arm or leg. For the spiritual side of discipline control, let's look at the practice of meditation. Willpower manifests in our ability to sit in a meditation posture without moving. Awareness needs to constantly focus our thoughts on the object of our meditation without letting our thoughts wander off into other areas. And life force is controlled through the process of pranayama, regulating our breath and withdrawing our energies from our external senses into our spiritual center. A fifth and final comparison between dance and the spiritual path is that they are both non-intellectual. You do not become a good dancer through reading a book. Though some reading is involved, the main focus is on the actual practice of dancing. Our physical body is significantly changed and gains new abilities through the many years of dance practice. Similarly, reading spiritual books is certainly part of making progress on the spiritual path. However, much more important is the regular practice of spiritual disciplines. Our emotional, intellectual, and spiritual natures are all significantly changed through performing spiritual disciplines for a period of many years. Gurudeva's Sadguru, Siva Yogaswami of Jaffna, Sri Lanka, stressed this point by telling certain devotees who like to read too many spiritual books, "It's not in books you fool." Hinduism's spiritual practices can be divided into four categories: good conduct, service, devotion,
and meditation. So this is what we can practice, drawing from these four categories. Good conduct is the foundation for all other practices in Hinduism. It begins with overcoming basic instinctive patterns, such as the tendencies to become angry and hurtful. A helpful list of these tendencies is contained in the 10 classical restraints called yamas. Observing the yamas naturally leads into a second set of practices, which are called the niyamas, which are of the nature of religious observances. Good conduct also includes performing one's duty to family and community, honoring holy men, respecting elders, and atoning for misdeeds. The second category of spiritual practices is service, which is also called karma yoga or seva, and refers to religious service given without the least thought of reward, which has the magical effect of softening the ego and bringing forth the soul's innate devotion. The third category is devotion, which is also called bhakti yoga, and centers around regularly worshiping the deity at the temple and inwardly striving to awaken a profound love of God in our hearts, soften our intellect, and develop a deep sense of humility. The fourth is meditation, which is also called Raja Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, as it consists of 8 limbs. Meditation begins with asana, sitting quietly in yogic posture, and pranayama, breath control, pratyahara, sense withdrawal, brings awareness into dharana, concentration, then into dhyana, meditation. Finally, dhyana leads to samadhi, God realization. In summary, we have looked at 5 ways in which the attitudes of mastering dance and making significant progress on the spiritual path are indeed identical. First area is focusing on our weaknesses and improving them. This is a very important area everyone can benefit from working on. This is what they're supposed to take home and do. We suggest you look for one area in your spiritual life in which you feel you need to do better. For example, on some days you pray in the home shrine before leaving the home, and on other days you skip it. Resolve to become regular in this practice. Resolve to pray every single day in the home shrine. Once you are regular, you have strengthened the weak area and as a result, made tangible spiritual progress. Om Namah Shivaya.